Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And a good Wednesday, everyone. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Thanks to Paul Page, who joined us yesterday on the show. Later in the week, we're going to have Kurt Smith on Voices of the Game. We'll talk about some of the legendary broadcasters, from Mel Allen to Harry Callis, Richie Ashburn, to Bob Prince and Rosie Rosewell, to Ernie Harwell, to Vin Scully, some of the great legendary voices of baseball, Red Barber. We'll talk about all that and more, and about the state of today's broadcasting in baseball with Kurt Smith, who has written several books on the subject, including Voices of the Game, which is the overview of it. He's written Mercy, which was about the Red Sox announced teams, and there's been many that he's written about specifically about, you know, your team out there. Kurt Smith is also someone that is interesting in this regard. The first time I ever did a talk show with him was 1990, 24 years ago. And he had written the book Voices of the Game, and I had wanted to have him on at that point, you know, and thought this would be a great guest to have on. Okay. So I said, I need your number to call you. And I was at that time, I was doing a talk show between 5:30 and 7 at night. I said, I need to call you about 6 o'clock. He said, what number can I reach you at? And he gives me this number. It's a 202 number. Well, I thought to myself, okay, fine, 202. Okay, DC. That's fine. So the night finally arrives, and I dial the 202 number, and this woman answers, and she says, the White House. And I thought to myself, I must have done something wrong here. I must have missed by a number, a couple numbers. I said, is this 202? And I said, whatever the rest of the number was. She says, yes, it is, the White House. I said, I was given this number by a Kurt Smith. And she says, oh, are you Mr. Jones? I said, yes. He says, he's expecting your call. I'll transfer you. I said, fine. Well, it turned out, I didn't realize it, that Kurt Smith was the speechwriter for President George H.W. Bush. Well, today he is working at the University of Rochester, where he's on the faculty there. And he's going to join us later in the week. We're just working out the time to have him on. Vince Welsh comes up tomorrow on the show. We'll go back to Indianapolis after talking to Paul Page yesterday. We will talk with Vince Welsh from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway tomorrow. Then next week, we'll have Scott Goodyear on. And then the next part of it is we're going to have Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, on. There's so much to talk about the business, not just of sports in itself, and IndyCar will be one of them. I'm going to ask him about the new Verizon deal, but also for the sponsorships surrounding a Michael Sam, who handled himself, by the way, so incredibly well and so poised yesterday at the St. Louis Rams press conference. He handled himself really, really well, and he understands the bottom line now. On a team that is rather deep at that spot, defensive end slash outside linebacker, the biggest part for him, and he understands this, is that he's going to have to be a guy that makes a big impression on them as someone that can fill that roster spot between 30 and 45, which also means he's going to have to be a big contributor on special teams. And he gets it. He understands that. And that's how you work your way through the system and get yourself in a spot to eventually play. Younger players will have to work their way in, for example, and get themselves on special teams. How many Penn State players over the years that we've seen have been late-round draft picks have to work themselves into playing on special teams? Nate Stupar is in that same position right now with the Jacksonville Jaguars. All right, so I thought Michael Sam couldn't have handled himself any better. Donald Sterling, Magic Johnson answered all the questions I brought up yesterday. Why did Magic call Donald Sterling and tell him to wait a week? Magic says that's not what happened. He said Sterling called him, and you know, and he told Donald Sterling, he says, to make sure, you know, he says, hey, you know, protect yourself with a lawyer. I mean, that's it, which is just good advice anybody would give. So Magic Johnson answered all those questions yesterday. So I'll say this: you watch the Sterling interview. The Sterling interview is the equivalent of standing in Utah watching a Union Pacific go east and an Amtrak go west on the same track, and you're just waiting to see exactly how violent the crash is. Amazing. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio today. 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. We'll also have Tony DeFazio of the Pittsburgh Sports Report coming up on Friday. Now, today we're going to have Josh Moyer from ESPN.com. We're going to talk about Penn State football and the caravan. Tonight's stop is in Scranton. That means I will be in Scranton tonight. And also, we'll be talking with Charlie Wimoth, who is the blogger for the Pittsburgh Pirates. The Pirates lost last night to the Brewers in Milwaukee. They're off to a rough start. We'll talk to him about that and Major League Baseball in general. And also we'll have Greg Pickle from Fight On, Stay On. So we have a full and packed show coming up today. Something that's very interesting that happened with the NFL draft as a side note. And this has been happening more and more with the NBA draft. I always laugh when I look at the NBA draft and I see there are 82 underclassmen that have declared for the NBA draft. And I sit back and I say to myself, did anybody tell any of these kids there's only 60 draft spots? That at minimum 22 of them are not going to get picked? Anybody tell them that? There's only 60. There's only two rounds in the NBA draft. 82 underclassmen declared. You say, okay, let's see. There'll be some seniors picked. Some foreign players picked, you know, and there could be as many as 30 to 40 of you that aren't going to get picked. Well, in the NFL, that's now happened. A record number 98 underclassmen came out, and 36 of them did not get picked. The advice that's needed to get through this process has to be intelligent advice. Now, let's not blame the media on this at all. Because, say for example, your job is to cover the NFL, and part of that job means covering the NFL draft. You put together a mock draft. That's part of your job. And look, you as consumers out there who love the NFL, absorb the NFL draft. You love the NFL draft. Ratings show between you combine what ESPN and the NFL Network did, they had record ratings this year. Highest ever rated opening round, highest rated second round, and the highest rated final day ever. You had Johnny Manziel on day one. You had Michael Sam on day three. So there was more intrigue around it this year, and the ratings were never better. So, yeah, you, the fan, absorb it. You're a Philadelphia Eagles fan. You're saying, okay, what are the Eagles going to do at 22? Okay, what does Mike Florio say? Let's see. He says the Eagles are going to pick. Okay, all right. What does Todd McShay say? Okay. So McShay says that. And what does Mel Kiper say? You know, you want to know what people say, what they think, what the differing opinions happen to be about your pick. So mock drafts are done left and right. Well, also, if you're covering the NFL, you're asked to sit there and put together the mock draft now for 2015. Well, there have been many instances where those mock drafts of 2015, and again, the journalist is just doing his or her job. That's all they're doing, his or her job. There have been misses, obviously, over the years based on projections, and people get bad advice as to what to do. Well, this year you had 36 underclassmen out of 98 not get picked. They've all signed with agents. Because of that, they're not going back to school. So let's get to a couple points on that. Number one, you need to have a head football or head basketball coach that has the student athlete at the forefront of what they do. And you have to develop a trust that you're going to give them the best advice. So when you look over the years at Dean Smith, who was outstanding at this, Joe Paterno, who was outstanding at this, to even in today's world, all right, on this day, I'm going to utter a name, you're going to say, what? John Calipari is outstanding at this. Listen to what I'm going to tell you. I know exactly how Joe went about this. player would come in and player would say, I'm considering going to the NFL draft. And Joe's response always was, okay, great. Let me call some people that I trust and I'll find out about the range you're going to go in. And then he would get back to the player and he would then talk to the player and say, look, I talked to a couple of people that I trust and they think you're going to be a first round pick. They think you're going to be a second or third round pick. You know what? They think that if you come out right now, you might be in the later rounds. Right? That way the player from Joe gets an honest, trusting answer as to where they go. And over the years, players at Penn State have gone to the draft early. Todd Blackledge, Mike Munchak, Kajana Carter. Okay? Yeah, and the list goes on as to how many have gone early. Allen Robinson, of course, being the latest to go with a year remaining at Penn State. The only player that Joe ever advised against going that went, there's only one, was Richie Anderson. And it turned out in the end, Richie Anderson was probably right. I remember flying out to Indianapolis, and it was only a piece of irony, okay? Sitting with Richie Anderson, who was, we were actually on a flight to Pittsburgh together. And he was then going to Indianapolis. I was going to Chicago. I had done a basketball game on TV on a Friday night and then had a radio game on a Saturday. So I was flying to Northwestern out of Pittsburgh, and Richie was going to fly the combine out of Pittsburgh to Indianapolis. And Joe advised Richie not to go into the draft. And it turned out, I think Richie ended up being, I want to say, a third-round pick. But he also ended up with a 10-year NFL career, made the Pro Bowl, and you know, and Richie felt so bad about his Penn State experience, his son's here now. But that's the only player I can think of that did not take Joe's advice. But Joe developed a reputation among players and among, high school players that would, if it came time and you were eligible to go pro, he would give you good advice as to what to do. Dean Smith was the same way. The number of players at North Carolina over the years that went to him and said, hey, you know, I want to go pro. Well, let me call some people. Let me find out. The list is long. And because of that, high school players would go to North Carolina just like they'd go to Penn State, knowing that if they get to a certain point, that the coach was not holding them back because of the coach's best interest, that the coach always was so secure in themselves that they would give them the right advice, pro or con. John Calipari's developed that same deal at Kentucky. Okay? Finds out who should and shouldn't go. And if they ask him, he gives them the advice and whatever. And when you develop that reputation, and the coach is so secure in themselves, they are the ones that can give the best advice. Who gives the worst advice? The entourage. There are too many young players that get people around them that have no feel for this. And I think it's a responsibility of every coach to develop the contacts to allow them, especially if you can be with a program for a long time, you know, where you're not always like going out there every year trying to save your own job, which so many coaches in the country are doing left and right. They're all waking up every day trying to save their own jobs. But if you can establish yourself and have a good, solid program, part of having a good, solid program is the ability to sit there and to tell your talented players, okay, this is what I hear, okay? Take the NBA. You'll be a lottery pick. You'll be no lower than 20. You know what? I talked to them. They said, you know what? They think you're a second-round pick. I'm just telling you, okay? Now you can make up your own mind. NFL, they think you're a first pick. They think you're a second-day guy, second or third round, which is good. I mean, if you get in the second or third round, that's good. You're a third-day guy. Maybe you want to come back for one more season and work it out. When you develop that kind of reputation, and you develop that kind of trust, and that you are the one that actually has the contacts and not the entourage, that can give the student athlete, even though it's a very inexact science, it gives them the best chance of making the best decision. This year, 36 of them did not make the best decision, and 36 of them were left out in the cold and now have to sign as free agents, and the road from free agency to a roster is a much longer one. Coming up, bottom of the hour news on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915. Have you ever sat back and really thought about that? For almost 100 years, Sunbury Motors has been here for you. Four generations strong. That alone won't make you buy your next new Ford from SMC. But that reputation, plus these deals, will. Buy a brand new Ford Fiesta for only $12,810. New Focuses start at $15,915 at Sunbury Motors. SMC has always been the dealer you think of if you want a new Ford truck. Brand new 2013. F-150 crew cabs are discounted $9,600, starting at $34,939. If you want to buy a new Ford, it's really pretty simple. A 99-year reputation of satisfying customers, the largest Ford inventory in six counties, and thousands of dollars of savings makes SMC your preferred Ford dealer. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And at sunburymotors.com. Sunbury.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. News Radio 1070 WKOK, Steve Jones Show. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday. And very pleased to be joined by a good friend of the show, Josh Moyer from ESPN.com.
Well, thanks a lot for having me on, Steve. Hope all's going well with you today.
I appreciate that. Same with you, my friend. You followed the caravan closely. It seems like every stop there's a little nugget here and a little nugget there that allows you to get to know James Franklin a little bit better. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, they've been a lot better than I've anticipated. I'm actually with the Center Daily Times, Travis Johnson, we're carpooling right now on our way to the next press conference in King of Prussia at 5 p.m. But yeah, I mean, everywhere you go, you know, you're getting to know him a little bit more. And I think it's really been invaluable, you know, for fans and for media, you know, to get to know him a little better. From the fact that he's a germaphobe and he's been locked in the bathroom before, to the fact, you know, more about his recruiting philosophy, to the fact that if you put a box of donuts in front of him, he'll end up eating seven of them, which is why he doesn't buy donuts. So yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of good stuff, you know, going on here.
What about the reaction and the interaction with fans? There are so many that have turned out for this. I believe all told, when this is all said and done, I think they've sold 6,500 tickets to all these. And I know the Scranton one tomorrow night's going to have 1,000. What about the interaction? How difficult is it for anybody to get enough time with them just because of volume?
I mean, I think if you're looking for one-on-one time with James Franklin, I think at this point it's impossible. I mean, Franklin talked about this. I don't know if you had talked about this on your show at all, but he said that he went to Wegmans to pick up 5 apples about a week ago. And, you know, he thought it would be a quick trip, and it ended up taking 90 minutes for him to get out of the store. And he said, you know, he cares what people think. So, you know, every time someone has an interaction with him, you know, he wants it to be a good one. But at some point, you know, he can't stay at Wegmans for you know, 4 hours. He needs to get out of there. So you're going to disappoint some people, and he recognizes that, and he cares about that, but, you know, it's just something he has to do. So, I mean, you know, he stayed longer. You know, he's done some, you know, he's done Q&As with the fans before before it gets underway, the actual caravan. You know, he'll be there for about an hour, meeting with fans or taking some photos. So, I mean, I think one-on-one time is hard to come by, but I think all things considered, you know, it's been pretty successful for the most part.
Now, the next part in going through this, he's been drawing crowds. I mean, that's one thing with the caravan. They've been fortunate in the 3 years that they've done this caravan thing, is that you have the newness and the freshness of Bill O'Brien the first year, second year new locations, and then you go to the third year and you have a brand-new football coach all over again. What kind of reaction have you seen from the fans toward him?
I think it's been overly positive. And the one thing you have to say about Franklin is he knows how to work a crowd. I mean, Bill O'Brien, you could tell, I mean, this is not his cup of tea. He didn't like it. You know, O'Brien was a great coach, but he wasn't a great politician. You know, Franklin, you know, we don't know if he's going to be a great coach at Penn State yet, but he's, I mean, let's say he's a great politician. You know, he's a charismatic guy, and, you know, he's gotten choked up. You know, he got choked up at the state college caravan stop. And, you know, I think fans have really been able to kind of empathize with, you know, his attitude. So, I mean, I think in that respect, you know, he's kind of, you know, that's a big reason for all these crowds. It's just they want to see what this new guy has to offer. You know, there's definitely a national buzz about Franklin, and they want to kind of see, you know, why that is.
And there's no question about that. What themes has he been able to hit at each stop, whether it's a press conference or with the crowd?
Well, I think one question that's come up repeatedly, if you're looking for a theme, is you know, what's going to happen to the jerseys? Is he going to change those? And he said that's the question he gets asked the most. It's not, you know, hey, who are you going to start on the offensive line, or, you know, what are you going to do with Christian Hackenberg? It's what about the jerseys? And, you know, like I said, he's a politician, so he's still not taking a stance on it one way or the other. He said he'll have a decision before the season. People are going to have to wait, but he wants to honor the old school and still do what the players want. So what that means is anyone's guess, because really that alludes to two different answers. But yeah, I mean, every place has been, you know, a little bit different. He talked a lot about recruiting, you know, what his philosophy is, you know, how – you know, he wants the players to graduate in 3.5 years and really tries to get them to understand, hey, if you don't go to the NFL, you're still going to leave Penn State with maybe part of a master's degree. So that's, you know, that's something that he's really tried to preach. And upgrading Penn State's facilities, maybe with new carpet or, you know, new posters or what have you. Like, he's trying to improve the image in that way. So honestly, I mean, I could go on, but you know, really, you know, each stop has kind of been unique in that respect.
I've always felt the branding, especially inside Haluba Hall, was lousy, considering everything.
Yeah.
There's certain limitations, as I've pointed out on the show at Beaver Stadium, because College Township is where the stadium is, and College Township has the right, as the township has all the ordinances on signage. That's why you don't see the back of the scoreboard at Beaver Stadium look like the back of the scoreboards everywhere else in college football because of College Township. But Haluba Hall, they can take care of it differently. Has he talked about branding at all to give it a different feel, different look in branding?
Yeah, that's something we got into last week a little bit. And he said, you know, just things that, you know, kind of upgrading it so that it's more, you know, 2010s. I mean, you know, a lot of the changes, if you walk into Haluba Hall, it looks great, but there's just, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe more TVs, things like that. You know, he didn't offer main specifics other than, you know, new carpet, things like that, you know, signage. But he did talk a lot about brand. I don't know if that means we're going to see some Paterno quotes in the locker room or what have you. But I think it's in that same vein where when you walk in, you know, he wants you to know that, you know, you're at Penn State and that this place is special. And not just because of him telling it or because the bare bones of the facility, you know, are so great, or the backbone, rather. You know, he wants to kind of, you know, get that signage and that branding out there as much as possible.
I know that as you go through this, the Big Ten meetings are going on right now in Rosemont, Illinois, and it's it's going to be a rather benign event. It should be, but the Big Ten is going to stick with going with 9 conference games in 2016, which will be the same in the Pac-12 and the Big 12. But the ACC and the SEC, Josh, have both decided to stay at 8. The SEC far more publicized than the ACC. What's your thoughts on a number of conference games and non-conference flexibility?
Honestly, I think it's kind of a cop-out by the ACC and the SEC to only have 8 games instead of 9, to be totally honest. We have 2 of our guys up there covering, you know, those meetings, however benign they might be. But I think if you're looking at strength of schedule, I think that's the main point with all this. And, you know, yeah, the Big Ten isn't the SEC. You know, it has more cream puffs maybe than the SEC. But
right.
I think they've taken a step in the right direction. They're not scheduling FCS opponents anymore. Whereas the SEC, you know, I feel like they've stayed stagnant. Big Ten is making the right steps, the SEC is remaining stagnant. And so that's kind of my take on it. I think I'd really like to see the SEC and the ACC move to a nine-game conference schedule, because I think that would be best for college football. And, I mean, who wouldn't prefer seeing, another conference matchup as opposed to, you know, watching Alabama stomp like Georgia State? I think everyone would prefer to see more conference.
One thing that, of course, James Franklin can't control, and he really can't talk much about, of course, are the sanctions. There's so many things it seems like it's going on when it comes to the sanctions and the Mitchell reports. What's your gut feeling as to how August could play out if the reports continue to stay positive? It's only a gut feeling on your part. I'm not, you know, because nobody has any hard and real information, but, you know, what's your gut say?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think at this point, it would surprise me if anyone felt differently than what I'm about to say, and that I really feel like the sanctions are going to be reduced yet again. I mean, they've only said positive things so far. How could they not? I mean, they've already reduced them once. It wouldn't surprise me at all if, you know, maybe they shave one more year off of the postseason. But certainly, I mean, you know, Penn State's done a good job of implementing all of the free recommendations, and I mean, I know they've implemented more than 100. I can't recall off the top of my head just how many, but I mean, that's a considerable number, you know, in a year or two when you implement so many things. So, Penn State's moving in the right direction, it seems, and yeah, I mean, obviously, no one knows for sure what's going to happen, but you have to think that for Penn State, it's really only positive what's ahead. Terms of, being reduced.
How have the other coaches been received? We know he's the rock star in this whole thing. He's the central figure to it, but how have the other coaches been received?
The other coaches in the caravan?
Yes.
I mean, well, honestly, they've kind of played second fiddle to Franklin, and I really don't think that should come as much of a surprise, but, they've been received just fine. I just feel like, you know, people aren't going there paying $50 or $60 for a ticket.
Right.
You hear Bob Warming talk about men's soccer.
Right.
I mean, honestly, I hate to say it, but I just feel like in the grand scheme of things, it's not really that important. It's just not something that people are going to see. They're kind of just waiting for Franklin, to speak, later in the caravan. But that being said, Erica Walsh said some things about, how important Penn State is and why her recruits come to us. And I think that really resounded with a lot of people, at the caravan. So, while they're just kind of the opening act to Franklin, I certainly think it's only helped Penn State fans, kind of become more familiar with what the university stands for and what these coaches' philosophies are.
Obviously, one thing that happens in the offseason is people develop expectations. There is still a realistic part to this. When Penn State goes to its spring practice and they start out with a max of 55 scholarship players, and in reality probably have in the low 40s by the time they get to the blue-white game, Michigan had 76 of their 85 scholarship players involved in their spring practice. There are only 75 scholarships in this whole thing. How important has it been for James Franklin to make sure the fans are reminded of this in terms of expectations?
I think it's important. And I know that's something he's reminding the recruits. It's one of the reasons he's been able to get the number three recruiting class in the nation currently, because he's able to say, hey, you could go to Ohio State, but here you might get playing time right away because they have so few scholarship players compared to those other squads. And because of that, the expectation should be down this year. If there's one thing I think Franklin needs to do a better job of, it's reminding Penn State fans that, hey, this is going to be a rough year. And, because he's talked about return to national prominence and national championships, that's not going to happen this year. This is a road on the journey to that end destination, but you're not going to get there this year. I think it was Athlon Sports recently ranked Penn State number 22 in the top 25 in their preseason rankings, thinking Penn State would go 10-2. I mean, I don't know how you feel, Steve, but I feel like 10-2 is very, very optimistic. And I think if Penn State reaches 7-5, I feel like fans should be happy with that. So Franklin has alluded to that before, but he hasn't come right out and said, hey, this year is not going to be easy, but, you know, we're going to be together and the future is bright. I mean, I feel like, you know, fans' expectations might be up, and I don't think they're going to be met if that's the case.
Well, because the part that happens in 2014, and I've felt since July 23rd, 2012, that the bottoming out potentially was 2014. I mean, because of the depth issue. And that's the issue. If you put Penn State starting 22 out there and they go every week and they're fine, I think Penn State's in good shape. But you and I both know that's not football. You know, and that's where the depth issue comes into play, and I don't know if he's addressed that with people or not.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's something he talked a lot during the spring about, too, because, I mean, that's the big storyline for Penn State. Even if they stay healthy, you know, do they have enough bodies to really field a team that can beat an Ohio State or a Michigan or even an Indiana? I mean, you look at their offensive line right now, it has to be the worst offensive line in the Big Ten. It has to. I mean, we're not sure. We might see Brian Dyer or Derek Dowry start this season at offensive guard when 2-3 months ago, you know, we were talking about what position they'd have at defensive tackle, you know, along the defensive line, you know, what their role might be. So, I mean, the offensive line is obviously the biggest concern, but even there, you have unproven wide receivers. You know, you have a thin linebacking core. You know, you have a secondary that should be better than last year. But Kaiser and Williams didn't exactly inspire a lot of confidence. How much can they improve? I mean, there's a lot of question marks in this team right now. I mean, there's a lot of talent, but it's not deep, like you said. And I think that's what's going to cost Penn State some games. You know, we saw during the Zach Mills years, how valuable an offensive line was because he didn't have it in Penn State's struggle. And I wonder if this year might not be somewhat of a throwback.
Back on July 23rd, 2012, did you envision what a great story this is playing out to be, and what's it been like for you to cover the way this has actually played out in some ways?
Well, honestly, I was hired. I remember that because I was hired about a month before to work for ESPN, and honestly, it was before the sanctions came down. I wasn't even sure if there would be a program. And, you know, I thought, honestly, at the time, I thought, you know what, Pitt is going to surpass Penn State. That's probably going to become a university because how does Penn State survive? You know, I didn't think there was any way. I mean, people said it would be worse than the death penalty. So, I mean, if you're going to put it into proper perspective, I mean, I think what they've been able to do, if it's not the best story in college football or the most surprising, it certainly ranks up there. I mean, I never expected this, that, you know, you'd have quarterback that's already drawing headlines that he might be the number one overall pick in the draft in 2016, that they have the head coach of the year, a guy who is one of the most coveted coaches in college in the NFL, James Franklin was the most coveted college coach, you know, would come to Penn State. I mean, I think if you told anyone this back in July of 2012 and they said they believe you, then they're bad liars. I don't think anyone saw them.
I think I've been kidding around with some people because one final question, then I'll let you go because I'm sure you're trying to tell Travis to keep both hands on the wheel. I know, and in the speaking engagements I've had, and I've done a few in the last couple of weeks, I've referred to it as the web.com tour when I go out. But I've told the fans, you know, when I've talked to them, that I think they're a huge part of the story because, it's just my guess, but the NCAA, if you were to have asked them almost 2 years ago, you know, I think they would have thought there would be 40,000 people in the stadium. What's been your reaction as to how the fans have reacted and how the vast majority have stuck with this thing?
You know, I think that's been a great story, too, Steven. You know, when you talk about the crowd, the first thing that comes to mind is Nittanyville or Paternalville or whatever you want to call it. Remember the Ohio State game the year the sanctions came down. I remember going to Nittanyville, and there were more people there than the year before, you know, when Joe Paterno was around. And I remember you know, talking to people and spending some time there, or a story I'd written, basically, you know, why are you here? I mean, why are there more people here this year? I mean, it seems like it should be entirely backwards. You know, there should be no one here, very few. And the answer I kept getting over and over again was, we're here because of the sanctions. You know, people wanted to support the school during its darkest time, you know, I think. You know, it's kind of like, you know, when something bad happens to one of your friends, you know, a real friend is there when you need help the most. Well, Penn State, you know, during the sanctions and during its dark time, that's when it needed help the most. I feel like a lot of fans felt the call to action that they needed to be there for the school. And I feel like one person really stood out to me. I can't remember her name right now, but she was a freshman or a sophomore, and she said, you know, she wasn't even a big football fan, but she and her parents bought season tickets this year because of the sanctions. You know, because, you know, they wanted to show their support for Penn State even during this time. So, yeah, I don't think a lot of people thought there would be such big crowds. But honestly, you know, I graduated from Penn State. You know, I grew up in Pennsylvania. You know, it didn't surprise me that you still had more than 90,000 people. But it did surprise me that you had more than 100,000, that you had so many people that fit you. I mean, you know, I think that's a pretty good testament to, you know, the fan base here. And it's certainly been one of the selling points of Franklin.
No question about it. Josh, thanks so much. Josh Moyer, ESPN.com. Second hour of the show coming up in just a few moments. News at the top of the hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK.